Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to take a look at what's going on right here in Baltimore City between redistricting, this new series coming out by the Daily Record that is going to turn development and money, the way it's being spent in this town, upside down on its head, I believe, and looking at the issues around Greg Bernstein and the state's attorney's office, and especially in regards to many leaders and members of the community and the African-American community who are asking, State Attorney Bernstein, where are you? So all that and more. Stay with us. Right now we have to turn this over to WEAA traffic on these rainy, slippery roads and see which way to go and which way not to go. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. As I said, there are a number of things happening in the city, but before I say that, let me say this, that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, you can go to www.mecu.com. Or you can go to thesteinershow.org. Again, click on the Maryland Employer Credit Union's banner on our website and find out information there. We're going to look at Baltimore here in the course of this next hour. 410-319-8888. The number of issues I outline, let me outline them one more time and introduce our guests. Well, guest at the moment. One guest is on his way. And that is that we see this new redistricting map, which some say, Michael Johnson, one of our guests, has said that it looks like we're dividing the city up by class so that in the future years that we know who will control the city on the city council. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll look at this Daily Record piece. We're looking at more succinctly and in a deeper ways over the coming weeks. Five-part series by Melody Simmons and Joan Jacobson in the Daily Record that is blowing open how the money was spent, misspent public money, our money, on Eastside Development with Johns Hopkins Hospital. Then there is the issue of the controversy surrounding the new state's attorney, Greg Bernstein, who has many people in the African-American community and leadership in the community, as well as talk show hosts throughout the community, have been asking, where are you, Mr. Bernstein, and why aren't you talking to the community about what's going on, given what happened in Park Heights and given what happened with the shootout, the 41 shots being fired by the police into a crowd that killed two people, one officer and another. So we'll tackle some of those issues right now. 410-319-8888 is the number here. In a moment, we'll be joined by Michael Johnson, founder and executive director of the Paul Robeson Institute. And right now in studio, our other guest, James MacArthur, contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice. James MacArthur, good to see you.
Hey, good to be here again, Mark. First time in the new year, so I could still say Happy New Year, even though it's February.
It is February, but you can say Happy New Year.
I haven't seen you this year.
You can wait and say Happy Valentine's Day if you like. But so maybe we'll wait on the redistricting thing until Michael gets here, because I know he wants to tackle that as well.
Well, and he plans to be he's a candidate for the upcoming primaries, right?
He is that.
Okay, so I didn't know if we...
But there's the class nature of those things. I'm interested in his analysis about.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I will say, hopefully he's listening. I mean, we ran a piece where he absolutely said, you know, he's going to kick you know who's A when it comes to the vote. Of course, he was talking about Mr. Welch, who is the selectee in the seat, a place sitter, essentially. He hasn't won any election yet. So it's going to be this year is going to be so interesting.
Mr. Mubarak appoints his son.
Hey, you know, I mean, it's all. Oh, boy. That was Mark Steiner. This is his show, folks.
Did I say that? No, I think James MacArthur said that. No.
Mark, it's just such an interesting year in local politics here because we have a place sitter mayor. She has not won a popular citywide election as mayor.
But she has won. She won in an overwhelming way when she ran for president.
She absolutely did. But he is city council president and mayor. No, not quite the same.
But it's hard to beat a standing mayor in the city of Baltimore. That is not something that, I mean, it's really hard I can't remember when a mayor lost an election in the city of Baltimore who was running for re-election.
Michael Johnson, they move on to higher office or get sacked or something, but I don't think they lose.
I think it's going to be very hard to beat. Not that I want to play this numbers game, but I just think it's going to be very difficult to beat Stephanie Rawlings-Blake in this election.
Well, I think that some of the things you have to look at, the fact is that these are selected people. These aren't elected people. And the fact that the last person who was selected won was Sheila Dixon. And prior to that, the last person who was selected mayor before that was Clarence Du Burns, who lost. To Kirk Smoak.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a real difficult time to beat a sitting anybody. But I think some things can happen.
We didn't want to start this conversation about this particular issue until you got into the studio.
I'm sorry. Traffic
is... No. I have full faith you'll be here because you're a man of your word.
And I appreciate
when you
that.
Say you're going to be in a place, you're going to be in a place. You're there. We talk about this redistricting map. Mm-hmm. Mary Pat Clark put a thing out today from her office saying... a press release saying, well, look, our district hasn't changed at all in this, which it has not. But others have. Your district did. Some others did. A new huge district running down through the center of the city.
The super district.
Super district. Yeah. The Inner Harbor. But you had an analysis on the phone with me that earlier today when we spoke was that this is – you're seeing this as becoming like a class divide.
There is something wrong when you – and this goes on every 10 years. Every 10 years is an argument. There's something wrong, though, when you – look at the new map, the proposed. And it's the first time map. It's an early draft. I got that. But when you look at a map like that and you see these super development opportunities all put into one particular location, whoever the council person would be, would have the opportunity.
Is that Bill's district right now?
That's Bill's and Reisinger's district. Now, you got to understand the 10 and 11. And it's less of the people who are representing the district than just the power that the district has. I mean, can you imagine how you can negotiate things a lot simpler because developers are going to be running into your face and they're going to be saying to you real simple that you can like, hey, let's, I can develop this project here. I can develop this project here. But then in the other districts that are landlocked, have no opportunity for any more development other than to repair some of the raggedy houses that are in the district. In the end of the day, how do we negotiate? How do folk in certain districts negotiate things with developers? Or do we always have a tendency to give not only the developers but the city projects alone? So, yeah, it's frightening to have a super district because – the districts are put together based on population. That's the rule. It's based on population. Every district should have the exact same amount of folk, either they're registered or not registered to vote. The question becomes is why certain districts have so much of the poverty, so much of the negative thing, or so much of the bad things that are going on, and other districts don't.
Is it classic gerrymandering? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's classic gerrymandering, but at the same time, I don't think it's progressive. I think I have a tendency to think that sometimes that many folk down at City Hall are just not that progressive because a map can look like anything. A map can look like anything. No one has to make a map that looks like what it looks like being proposed. I can get to your house 8 different ways. So I sure enough can make sure that I can make a map that look 8 different ways. So I'm a little concerned about the fact that it's why it seems like that we are almost segregating the district again.
There you go.
But like it was segregated years and years ago. And the three of us around this table are very clear of that. And it doesn't have to be segregated by race all the time. It can be segregated by classism.
Right.
And so when you look at this swath of a property opportunity and this swath of development opportunity, and you look at the – not only the ninth, but you look at the other districts, and at the same time, you recognize that the elected officials, and many of them, not all, but many of them are satisfied because you didn't add maybe white folk in your district, or maybe you didn't add any more black folk in your district, which would make the race maybe a little bit more interesting and make it a little bit more, I don't know, colorful.
For want of a better term. Go ahead, please.
Well, you know,
sorry for this cough, folks.
On the topic we let in with the selected individuals, you know, it's very interesting when you sit back and observe how much of our current ruling body, for lack of a better term, got there by being selected at one point or another. If I'm not mistaken, even Young, he was initially, he got there because he was appointed, selected. Of course, our friend Mr. Stokes, same thing. And that it just seems like that's a good way to get in. And once you're in, you stay in. You know, and this is nothing disparaging against the individuals that that's how they got in. But, you know, it gives you that bully pulpit. You're in that position of power. You got a record now, even if it's only a 6-month record, where you can say, well, this is what I have done versus a candidate who is trying to get out there. And I'm encouraged that we're hearing proposals to change the process. Is that correct?
Yeah, they call it the Michael Johnson bill, actually.
Yeah, see?
Michael Johnson bill. To go back to the map, I know we're doing hodgepodge and staying a little close on the thing, but to go back to the map, I think that the same way that I received over a couple of months ago, every day I was receiving a mailing from elected officials or people who wanted my vote. I think that if we need to just fix the process. I mean, I know there's a short window. There's the census. There's the numbers. How do we put the numbers together? The map. The mayor puts the map together. And in all due respect, I understand what Mayor Blake absolutely did. And for her, it's a great map. But you know, at the same time,
well, that was a MapPel person. She's not. I mean, we don't have it. If she win 5 out of 10 districts, doesn't mean you win.
No, I mean, I'm just saying that there's, I mean, everybody, you know, there's an old line out there that says, the Chinese say that, you know, Americans plan for next week. We plan for generations.
Yes.
I think that people are planning for a lot further than September the 13th. I think that we should all be a little, we're all pretty smart around the table that we know that the people are planning beyond the 13th. I just think that you reward your friends. I mean, absolutely. It's quite apparent. We've seen it the last couple of times. Obviously, I've seen it then. You reward your friends and you reward your people and you reward people that support you. Well, and you do what you got
to
do.
On the way to the phones here, folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. We're going to touch lightly on all three subjects and come back to them. We want you to join us with your thoughts. And you put on your Facebook page today, Michael, something we've been talking about. We're actually interviewing the two women, Melody Simmons and Joan Jacobson, who wrote this series, which I think, from what I've been reading in this series, they're both incredible investigative reporters.
Incredible.
Amazing women. I've worked with both of them on different things. And this could be one of those – I'll just throw this out there just in terms of where I think it might – this would be one of those potentially Pulitzer-nominated stories once they finish, I think. This is and we'll turn the idea of development and how we spend public money on its head. They're raising a lot of issues. But they're talking about the East Baltimore Development Incorporated that built this whole biotech park that he built and the entire Mid-East neighborhood of working class black folks was just destroyed and people put somewhere else and sent other places and the battles they had to have to get the money to move other places and the biotech industry that never arrived. And we're a cash-strapped city and we have $212 or more million dollars that was spent from our coffers on something on the east side that looks like the old 1950s, 60s refrain of Negro removal. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. So
you know, I've heard about it. But yeah, one right. of the things –
I don't remember.
I think that one of the things in collection with that, Mark, you can almost look at it on the west side with the highway to nowhere.
Absolutely. Right.
I mean, the damage that African Americans have – and let's be clear, that white folk ain't always been nice to black folk here in Baltimore
really?
City. Oh, no, Mark.
Huh.
No.
Where
no,
have I been?
No. No. You've been fighting at times with me on repairing it.
I'm being
so,
silly, but yes,
so there, right. What you see in this article is a great article, and I'm encouraging everyone to read the pieces as they come
They're
out.
Amazing. They're amazing.
Because if you read the pieces, you'll see the paradigm between that and the highway to go nowhere is almost the same. 64 square blocks of neighborhoods were removed from the west side. People never came back.
A vibrant part of our city.
At that time, the largest black middle class in the state of Maryland was right there in that neighborhood. So when we look at this story, which is a great story, and some criminal indictments I think needs to go down all of this is true, you have now folk that we know who I'm quite sure everybody at this table knows who was asked to move, given some money based on whatever the reasons and rules were. Then they got into a house that they couldn't even afford, and some of them has now lost the house that they moved to.
Talking about the people from the east side,
Mid-East
neighborhood, were moved out.
And there's a lot of blood on a lot of people's hands when it comes out of this, when this story finishes.
And the sad thing about that is I'm glad this series is out because it's showing us how they got to where they are now. But it's happening now elsewhere still.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, years from now, there'll be other articles exposing it. That's actually happening here now. And when – a lot of us have talked about what happened on the east side while it was happening and predicted it would turn out like this, but we were called conspiracy theorists or this. Oh, no, that's not what they're doing. Well, it is what they're doing. And I don't know why. How many times does it have to happen here locally before people get wise to it ahead of time? I've seen neighborhoods that it just seems like time forgot, the city forgot, left to degrade, the property value drops to nothing. And then if eminent domain comes, you get market value. Well, what has market value become in the 10 years of neglect? So it's pretty clever, you know. And then the next thing you know, like you said, you get put somewhere. You only get however much you get. But it ends up kind of being a losing proposition. If you have to call the city 100 times to repair your busted up street and these things, and they just flat out ignore it, you know.
But it goes back to voting. If people don't vote, or if you vote for the same thing expecting different results, I mean, come on, isn't that sound like insanity or something?
I'm curious to see if we'll see members of the Baltimore City Council and the others who stand up and say, as a result of this investigative reporting by Melody Simmons and Joan Jacobson in the Daily Record, should we have an investigation? Should we dig further? Should there be a special prosecutor's office looking at this as opposed to—
You know, if the special prosecutor in the office was investigating half of the things, we'd be in court and being investigated for the longest time. So, I mean, there's some great things about Baltimore, and I love Baltimore to death, make no mistake about it.
Yes, absolutely.
But there are some bad, bad things that have happened to some very nice, innocent people in the city, black and white.
I'll again open to the phones, and Stephen and Aaron, the first two callers up, join them here at 410-319-8888. The other question is here, and I think that it's a difficult question to wrestle with, which is in the last state's attorney's race, Greg Bernstein, we know, beat Pat Chesney and is now the new state's attorney. And I you know, as kind of a neutral observer, I just kind of interviewed them both and had them on to hear their ideas. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that we criticized Pat Chesney for was really very specious in the long run, I think, though a lot of people always argued that her office was not the best organized office in the city. The arguments went back and forth. However, the issue now is that Greg Bernstein is state's attorney. And since that's happened, we've seen what happened in Park Heights with a young African-American boy beaten up by a group of men from the Sherman Patrol. And that has what has erupted out of that with charges being diminished, so the guy does face 10 years, charges being lowered, and the whole question of bail, and his brother was now indicted, I think today, right?
Yeah.
Today. So, and then the shooting in
the Select Lounge.
Lounge, where two people were killed, and 41 shots were fired by the police. So, while there are active cases, you can't expect the state's attorney to say what he's doing in those cases because he's state's attorney, and the state's attorney has to prosecute those cases. But with the outcry in the African-American community and distrust that already existed, not to come out and have a conversation about what we're trying to do, I think has been a real mistake. And I'm wondering, what do you think is going on here?
You know,
this is Mr. Investigative Reporter.
It's so interesting to observe because, of course, a lot of people know when the campaign was going on, I followed both sides very closely, interviewed them, went to their events. And, you know, I honestly have some pity for Mr. Bernstein because he came into office with numerous high-profile cases. Don't forget the Tshamba case, though it happened before him, it's now under his purview. And that's a lot. He didn't get to ease into this. Like it was said in one article, the honeymoon is over. You know, he's right in the job. And from all accounts, from talking to people who know him forever, he's an absolutely competent attorney. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're prepared for everything else that comes with being in public leadership. This is something he's still learning on the job. And like you said, to quell some of the firestorms that are coming up, that's separate from being able to manage that office, from being able to prosecute the case, which I have no doubt in his ability. But we're clearly seeing that, you know, he has to get the crash course, the cliff notes on, you know, making statements without saying more than you're allowed to, because I could tell you, Doug Gansler, our attorney general, he was state's attorney. He got called up on ethics charges for saying too much when he was state's attorney about an active case once. So don't think that that's not on the mind of Mr. Bernstein or any other state's attorney. Like, gosh, I don't want that. So it's a fine line. You have to give the community something. You have to address the needs. But at the same time, we know, like, the police department and others like to say, well, we don't comment on ongoing investigations. But the state's attorney being an elected position, the people do expect to hear something. And unfortunately for Mr. Bernstein, we really haven't heard anything.
I think
that, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know all of the legal jargons that go with it. But as a person in the community and watching prior to this, I know the way that the prior state's attorney at the same time a lot of times didn't say anything either. But with all of these high profile cases that are coming in, somebody should be saying something. I think folk expected once you got in, they expected great things or different things. Different things, the way you were going to deal with the community, because you went through the projects and you knocked on the doors in the neighborhoods and you said, "I'm your guy." I'm
said it right here.
Yeah, he said it right there. He says, "I'm like you're waiting again. We're waiting for Superman." The problem is that there's a lot of bad things that are going on in the community, and people want to hear somebody say, "You know, it's going to be okay." And then they want to see you act on it. And, of course, we don't want anyone to have any issues about – I mean, I would like a case to go all the way through and the person found guilty if they're guilty. But somebody needs to say something. And it's not just Greg Berenstein. Actually, it's – the mayor hasn't said
That's
anything.
That's what I'm thinking.
My congressman hasn't said anything. The councilman that they just selected hasn't said anything. The councilman for that district hasn't said anything. Cole's the councilman for that district. Yeah. So down the line.
Where the club is, you're talking about.
Oh, right, where the club is. And for the shooting, of course, is Ricky Spector, who was at the meeting, and I'm quite sure said a lot of things.
Where the beating was,
thank you. But at the end of the day, no one's saying anything. So when you don't say anything, other people say everything.
Well, do you think we're just so used to having a mayor who really doesn't say much and doesn't address a lot of issues that now instead of wanting the prosecutor to just prosecute the case, that's all I really want him to do. We're looking for him to make statements, but really, is that really what he's there for?
He's not there for that, but I think that there's, politically speaking, not legally speaking at the moment, given the tensions in that race, given the tensions in this city around this election, to come out and said something about, look, 41 shots were fired.
21 into a police.
And so that we have to investigate this. Maybe this was justified. Maybe it wasn't. We're going to find out, because if you look at the state police manuals, there's no justification for those many bullets being fired. We have to see what happened here. But we're going to look into it. Just that.
Right.
Just that.
Say something.
But why are we letting the commissioner off the hook? He hasn't said anything either.
Who? Well, we're
the commissioner.
Right. You know,
I mean, all of that is that. I think that these are things people want to hear. And I think that it has to do with building a level of trust that has been broken down that I think we talk about rebuilding. And and it's opened up a lot of other ugly wounds, which we talk about.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you have people picking sides based on race, people picking sides based on religion. At the end of the day, in the Upper Park Heights area, we know that there were, according to what we understand the report, that there were three people involved. You arrested one person. You arrested one person, and then you waited, and you arrested another. And all of this is all not fair at the same time. But somewhere along the line, somebody's got to stand up and say, you know what, we're going to investigate, we're going to take care of it. Give me 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 30 days, whatever, but we're going to fix it. Because 2 days ago was the time limit. I think it was Sunday.
Well, that was for the shooting at the club.
The 3 weeks.
And
we're still waiting.
We were told that it would be wrapped up and concluded. Absolutely. Where Officer Torbett and Sean Gamble lost their lives. I actually broke that story on the internet.
Yes,
I had some sources call me, said, "You won't believe what's going on down here. There's all these people shot." They were standing there and telling me this stuff, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even process it. And right away he says, "Looks like one of our officers is shot, perhaps by other officers." Like, no way.
I mean, we're getting comments, and I'm a pet lover. Before anybody from Peter, anybody call me up. But we get more comments from elected officials about the dog and now the cat who were harmed, viciously harmed, by some young people than we're getting about human beings.
Well, it's a good distraction.
You know.
And I work in
human
that
beings.
Line, too.
I mean, it's something wrong with that whole process.
Mark, what bothers me a lot about this is, again, in fairness to Mr. Bernstein, I would like to hear some more from him, but even in the case of the Shamrim, it happened before he was there. The police are the ones who didn't make more than one arrest. Not Bernstein. The reason there's no charge, why were they sitting on these other individuals? you know, this goes, so there's at every level you can ask a lot of questions. Because
this is also a time, I think, when there could have been some public leadership that called for an openness and healing on some levels here, which I think is really important.
Absolutely.
And I'm not talking about kuyamba, touchy-feely stuff. I'm talking about that if you have a multi-religious, multi-racial community like Northwest Baltimore, that the patrol groups, the mayor could say, somebody could say, we want from now on these patrol groups to work together. We want blacks and whites and Jews and Christians and Muslims in these cars together patrolling the streets of Northwest Baltimore.
But do we have to wait? Do we have to wait for that to happen? I mean, do we have to wait for this to happen, for that comment to be said?
Maybe you do. I don't know. because if it appears everything's cool, then nobody says anything. But when it really, you know,
it's never been cool. But I mean, well, it's never been cool, but
folks, there's a lot of you wanting to call in. There is in this order. I'll tell you how we're going to do this. There's Stephen in Waverly, Aaron on the east side, Denise on the east side, and Linda in Catonsville. All four of you are going to get on the air as soon as you return from this very brief break. Michael Johnson, who is founder and executive director of the Paul Robeson Institute, James MacArthur, contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice. And as we go to break, I remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. So before they take your house, call that number. We'll be right back.
Org.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're joined in studio by James MacArthur, contributing editor and crime correspondent for the Investigative Voice, and Michael Johnson, founder and executive director of the Paul Robeson Institute. And we are talking about some very sensitive but serious issues facing our community here in Baltimore. Numbers 410-319-8888. And who did I say was first? Stephen, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Stephen.
I just had a couple of brief comments, and one is basically, in regard to the city council and the structure of city government here in Baltimore, it's totally dysfunctional. I mean, I can't recall when something truly been progressive has been passed. I know that the bill to stop foreclosures was nixed in the bud, mm-hmm. to the Walmart's, you know, living wage for retail workers, and it seems like all it takes is one interest of council member to block everything. And in regards to the incident in Park Heights, I mean, I think we need to stop sugarcoating it. It was a racist attack, and if it was, say, the Nation of Islam who were doing community controls and a white youth got beat up, city officials, there'd be so many people calling for blood. And I don't hear anyone, city officials, you know, basically calling for disbanding Shumrum, which you hear the transcript, the court records of what was said or whatever, is very much as a vigilante group or whatever, following high school students from their school. You know, this is something that, you know, it should be hate crimes. It should be definitely. And how can someone who's charged with a felony, you know, be able to leave the country, or people who have misdemeanors and are told they can't even leave the state, but yet this person, you know, is able to go to Israel. And it's also a question, I think, and is very timely or whatever the topic beforehand, is why is an individual has a mentality, you know, this person is a special forces, Israeli special forces person who is accustomed to dealing with Palestinian, you know, people that are uprising, and I think there's a connection, you know, with the mentality of looking at people of color as an inferior. And so, briefly, there are community organizations who are demanding that they disband Shumrum, that full prosecution for hate crimes, and lastly, that there needs to be some type of reparations or redress in the poor communities of Baltimore City. If you look at Upper Park Heights, area compared to the, it's not just Lower Park Heights, it's all throughout the city, from Guilford to Greenmount. And
Stephen, thank you so much. I don't know what happened. I did not push any buttons, so I don't know what happened there. But, gentlemen.
I mean, obviously, I mean, I find it as a hate crime. I mean, just from the comments that were being said, and I'm allowing the so-called process to go through. I think Hassan J. Dama wrote an excellent piece when he and had a press conference to ask the state's attorney to make his comments. I think that when you look at the difference between certain neighborhoods and other neighborhoods, it still goes back to representation and leadership. I mean, one of the things about the West Baltimore that most folks don't know about, I mean, this is an area that has produced mayors, congressmen, state senators, delegates, but no one has – but the district itself hasn't advanced. That the reason that a lot of the things look the way that they look is that they haven't been progressive, and I think he made the comment. Is how progressive people need to be. Case in point, the towing bill. The towing bill was on its way to be signed almost, and now it's been pulled back. Well, if you look at the financial reports of some of the people who've been who are representing the West Side and the East Side and stuff, you look at their financial report, you'll see the same towing companies who has the medallions, and I know this is another piece, who has the medallions, who's locking down on the towing money, are receiving money from these people. And these are the same ones who shut the towing bill down that would have allowed an outside company to come in to manage the lot on Pulaski Highway, but it would allow other companies to come in, primarily a lot of small minority companies who are not locked into the big towing money, get an opportunity. So we've got to look at the fact that this is a mass thing that's going on in the city. This is not one politician versus another. This is a lot of politicians. And the stuff that's going on in Egypt, maybe a lot of that stuff need to go on here. Maybe we need to have a million-man march again here in Baltimore City.
I've been saying similar. I'm like, if those people down there are willing to lay down their lives, literally. To bring regime change, we don't have to go to that level, but we sure should be doing more than we're doing now. I mean, if they're willing to go that far,
that's right.
Are people happy with the way Baltimore currently is, with the way our city functions, the way city services are? I really think not. But whenever it comes down to the opportunity to make change, you don't see it. Mark, the caller mentioned the group, the patrol group. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was years ago, there was a Muslim group. Wasn't the Fruit of Islam here at one of the projects? Yeah, they were disinvited.
More than one. Well, more than one.
They were disinvited, though, weren't they?
You know, again, there is a difference. There is a perceptional difference for a lot of racial reasons. Why it is that African-American men stand up and can look clean and proud and be in control. People didn't like that.
And if I'm not mistaken, they were quite effective in their patrol areas.
They were the best.
they kept violence down.
They kept it down to a nil, and everybody respected them.
So they were effective.
Because you're going to respect the Nation of Islam and other brothers who are clean, upstanding citizens.
So they were effective, they were working, and we got rid of them.
Well, you know.
410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, you know, I'm convinced at this point that we got to fire the mayor because she's clearly shown that she just doesn't care. And I truly don't have any confidence in her leadership. And I'm one of those who, quite frankly, I'm at the point where she got to go. We got to give her unemployment slip. Because the kind of thing she's allowed to happen in our city shows me, and this redistricting plan is just icing on the cake, shows me she doesn't care about the black community. And it's time we in the black community don't give a darn about her, and it's time we fire her, to be honest. And not only her, but maybe the council president, maybe members of the council, too, need to be fired. Because we need new leadership. Our city is suffering from a leadership that just doesn't care. And it's time the public decided that, one, to stop treating them like they're the boss and act like we're the boss and get rid of her and all the rest of them.
And thanks for holding on being part of the show.
You know, I think Aaron is being unfair. I mean, one more term and the mayor gets the lifetime pension. I mean, he's trying to deprive her of this, you know.
410-319-8888. Denise, on the east side, you're on the air.
Hello, good evening.
Hi, Denise, good evening.
Hi, everybody. I have roots. My family roots are in East Baltimore. And whenever I travel down Washington Street or Wolf Street, it still touches my heart because my great-grandmother had a house that, you know, we all were raised in. And when I drive down there, you know, that's all gone because of the EBDI. And it also disturbed me. I never knew until I was reading the article today that that area where we were all raised was called Middle East.
Yes. Yes.
And one of my cousins told me that the term came from Senators McFadden and Hattie Harris. And that really bothered me because, of course, when you think of the Middle East, you don't think of anything positive, you know, about the Middle East. And then I'm thinking, two African-American leaders, why would they even come up with a nickname? I don't know if they were doing it to be cute or fun, but it really disturbs me. And what I'm trying to, if you guys could help me out, Michael, you seem to know a lot about what's going on with planned projects around the area. Now, I understand, of course, you know, that was prime for Hobson's. That's prime territory, East Baltimore, all around in that area, Eager Street, Bond Street. But if you could kind of visualize, just come a little farther up to Gay Street, like Gay and Chester, where the brewery
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all up there on, I think it's Chester, and there's a small street called Castle Street. Well, you have boarded up houses.
Oh, that looks like Middle East. It really does, over there.
Right. That yeah. does. Could you explain to me, especially on Castle Street, my son, we were driving through there one day, and my son said, Mommy, where are all the houses? Can you explain to me why there's an entire block? I mean, it's gone. The city has put up a wrought iron black fence, and grass is growing. I mean, what was planned for that project that city leaders had those houses torn down? Was Hopkins going to come up that far to North Avenue?
Well, there were a lot of development ideas that were supposed to be coming, and because of obviously the economy and things, a lot of things went flat. There were a lot of promises that were supposed to come through. But, you know, constantly, people are uprooted, people are moved, and things happen a different way. It is somewhat sad to see the condition, and I have had a lot of family members in East Baltimore. To see the conditions of it. And I just think that the best thing I can suggest you to do is call your councilperson, ask your councilperson what was the development plan, if any, and pray that the rest of the city don't look like this. But this is about gentrification. This is about the removal of people who won't be here to look at the future of Baltimore 25 years. Not a conspiracy, just simple economics. It's about the haves and the have-nots. And then a lot of people in mind, a lot of folk in East Baltimore was part of the have-nots. And a lot of it had to do with the elected officials who were duly elected in those areas who allowed these things to go down. And right now, as you drive through, and as my friend says, one of the things about it, you want to talk about the Middle East, it looks like Katrina after the storm. It looks like it all over the place.
Well, you James. Know, it's like you allow an ever-expanding entity to go unabated, unchecked. You assist them, but at the same time, they're not adding to the tax base.
Hello?
You know, because they're not paying taxes. I mean, I'm glad they're giving jobs, but no, realistically, and this is something that we keep talking about, but something needs to happen, a use fee or something. You cannot have this. It just doesn't work economically. It doesn't add up that all of this property space is being absorbed, but what are we getting back for it? I mean, when there were homeowners, you got property taxes there, but acres and acres are going to this development to nonprofits that are just not paying in. It's that simple, really. It's not even my area of expertise, but a casual observation of it, and you see what's going on. It's quite a sweetheart deal, honestly. It is.
Well, it is, and again, as we were saying, and let's get back to the calls, Mother. But as we were saying, again, people are making sweetheart deals based on people who are supposed to be the gatekeepers are allowing these deals to go through.
This was like the same groups that were created to build the Inner Harbor and build parts of downtown development. They were quasi-public. They were actually private nonprofits. So they didn't have to have legally show their books about whether we're getting the money.
And don't.
How they're spending money. And that's the part that also has to change. This is public money. It's taxpayer money going into this. And it's also the power of developers, the power of moneyed interests that have always had their way and continue to have their way and build what they want. I think that's the balance. We've lost the balance here.
No, absolutely. And it also has to do a lot, too, with the spine of people. If you don't have no spine, you let people do a lot of things to you.
But you know, this is a democratically ruled city. We keep hearing the Democrat Party is for the people. And it's about, you know, looking out for the people. So, you know, I'm at a loss as what's really, really going on here. Mark, I'm going to throw it out, but we don't have time to go there. But how much money, public funds, was thrown at this Grand Prix? I mean,
$7 million of stimulus money.
That those roads are getting repaired, but the ones I have to drive over every day that's ruining my alignment, that I have to come out of pocket to fix, they're still the same way they are.
$7 million of stimulus. $7 million of stimulus money was put into the road fixing down about this stock car racing thing, neighborhood, we remember the flags that always came to racing cars. But
would it make a difference if the investment was made and then the money comes back and the city makes $50, $60, $70 million on this?
Then is that the kind of bet you want to have, or would you like to put $7 million into a neighborhood and maybe, like in case of the 9th district, we have no library. We're the only district in the entire city that doesn't even have a place where children can go read. Could you take $7 million and fix the roads or the streets, or take $7 million, I don't know, keep a rec center open, or even create some job opportunity, because they spending $7 million of stimulus money for this race car. I don't know anybody working on this project. And we have been sending young folk down there to try to find a job, and they can't even get past the gate.
Well, when the circulator came online, I jokingly said, I mean, this is great service. I'm glad it's a green, you know, it's easing congestion. I like the concept, but I don't like that so much of the funds are going into it. I said, I'll be happy when there's a free bus that goes to Park Heights and take people
to a works
training program. People who can't afford,
store.
Who can barely afford the weekly bus.
That
fare.
Would be good. I mean, I think the circulator, though, is a great idea. I mean, people, all kinds of folks using the circulator now.
Let's be clear who's using the circulator rides in areas that folk who could actually afford to ride the bus for the pay. The circulator doesn't ride into, because I ride the early bus, okay? So I understand. You can't get on a bus to go to a grocery store because you have no grocery store in your community, then who really benefits off the circulator bus? The people that are leaving from this particular John Hopkins who are going to John Hopkins on Charles Village, or is it the people who on Poplar Grove and Emerson Avenue and certain places don't have a supermarket to even go to? I think they'd like a free bus too.
Let us hit the phones here. 410-319-8888. Point well taken. Michael Johnson and Linda in Catonsville, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Hi. Look, I'm going to make a comment about the officer.
Mm-hmm.
God is calling for accountability. Somebody should be charged with murder. For 20 bullets to enter into a man's body, anybody, and I don't care whether they're in uniform or not, you cannot justify a man being shot 20 times. It sounds like a trigger-happy, a licensed-to-kill police officer that took advantage of his position. A man is dead that should not be. And there's no way justified. I don't care how long they take. But all I know is that no matter what your position is, God is calling for accountability. If you commit the crime, you do the time, no matter who you are.
Linda, thank
you. And I pray with the family that lost that loved one, that have to deal with 20 bullets going into their family member's body. Something has to be done.
Linda, thank you so much.
You know, you're looking at me, so I guess you want to comment. You know, that case is scary to me at so many angles. One of them is because I work plainclothes law enforcement, and one of my biggest fears was, some yahoo is going to blast me while I'm trying to take somebody down who needs to be taken down. The closest I came to it was a guy with 14 warrants that I'd been tracking down for a long time. I had him cornered, and you know, the next thing you know, a whole bunch of uniforms are coming, and they're surrounding me because somebody said, this guy is looking suspicious outside this building. And like, because I'm about to move in on someone. I'm waiting for my backup. So this kind of thing happens a lot, but fortunately, lives are not usually lost. But what makes it scarier, and what I think a lot of people can relate to, Mark, is I've had this situation, unfortunately, where I literally come face-to-face with bad guys in my neighborhood. They broke into my car. I had to stand my ground, get out of here, call the police or whatever. And it's like, I don't want to be afraid that the responding police are going to think I'm the bad guys. If they can do that to an officer that worked in that same district for 8 years, that they should know, they don't know me. I'm Joe Blow, and I match the description of the guys I just called in on. You know, and talk about needing to address and healing in the community. The confidence that this community has had in this department has always been low for so long. It's even lower now. Less than a mile from where I live, the young man with the sword at Hopkins did what happened, which was justifiable, they say. He killed an unarmed man who was broken into his house. No charges or anything like that. In my case, I had two goons come at me when both of my neighbors were killed via home invasion, and I got arrested by Baltimore police for taking a legally owned firearm and telling them to get out of here. But you know, I just think, gosh, I'm glad I was arrested and not shot, even though I called for help. But how many times in the black community do black people call for help and end up being the subject instead of, you know, the citizen, the recipient of customer service? I mean, I had to beg a sergeant days later, hey, my car is broken into. A report still wasn't taken. I became the subject. No one asked for a description, what they look like, what's going on. So this department, nobody talks about it. It's not Bernstein's job, the commissioner, the mayor. Nobody is saying, you know what, we agree. We paid out millions in settlements every year. We agree this department is needing reform, and we want to work together so that the citizens can be confident that when they call 911, you know, they're not coming guns ablaze, and we don't all have to take cover.
Right.
You know.
I think that is one of the reasons we want to see more of a public face to the prosecutor's office coming up to talking to the people, reassuring this community what's going to be done and how it's going to be done. I think that's the problem that he has right now, 410-319, and that the community has, because what you're saying is true. It happens every day. What you just described happens every day in the city. 410-319-8888. Marva, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here. Mrs. Steiner?
Ah, you're on the air, Marva.
Okay. I wanted to comment about the thing with the example of the there's nothing but another example of white supremacy, police brutality, and the fact that every black man, whether he is in a suit and tie or jeans, pants down his behind, is considered public enemy number one, okay? After all the protests, the sit-ins, the marches, etc., at the end of the day, it's very obvious. Integration never was and is not the solution to our problem, okay? You cannot force yourself on people. You cannot make people like you. And you have to accept yourself and like yourself before anybody likes you, okay?
Norma, thank you. Michael?
You know, there is a generation who is growing up right now who hasn't seen anything but bad things when it comes to law enforcement in the community. And they're not afraid of the police like I may have been in my time. And the worst thing is going to happen is that people are going to start shooting back if we don't get a handle on what law enforcement is and should be. And so when they look at – this is Black History Month. They look at the films, and I had a young person tell me today, well, they were shooting water holes and dogs on you. Why ain't y'all fight back? Because if they come in my neighborhood like that now, we're going to pop one of them. That's what people are saying and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that I can't say today wrong, because everybody has a certain experience. But like my friend said, the experience he had is the experience is being duplicated over and over and over again. As I heard you once before when we were saying going to an airport, both of us can be profiled in an airport. But in my neighborhood, I'm profiled more than you. So, yeah, I can understand where she's coming from.
410-319-8888. Let's try to get another caller in here if we can. Maybe two if we can sneak them in. Bob, you're on the air. You there, Bob?
Yeah. No, my name is Baba.
Brother Baba.
Good evening. Marva was right. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say this. I heard someone say we ought to do what they are doing, that them Arabs are doing in Egypt. At one time, these Arabs enslaved Africans before Europeans did. And you see an Arab presence now, and it's not the Middle East, it is Africa. It's not an Arab country. Egypt is an African country. And the Africans were driven further down to Nuba by them Arab invasions. That's what you see now, a large Arab population in Africa. And to say that you're going to have some heart and do that, you're not going to do that. Malcolm said that you are scared, you bleed when the white man say bleed. You will demonstrate in front of empty buildings, go in front of police station when it's closed on a holiday, and demonstrate about the problems here. With them Arabs over there, those Arabs and Africans over there, they blow the place up. Because okay. they not phony. These brothers here, Baptists with Arab names, as just as phony as they can be.
All right, Bob, I'm only jumping in because we are literally out of time. Literally out of time. Appreciate being part of the show. Michael Johnson, James MacArthur, good to have you both with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Good luck on the campaign trail, and good luck in reporting and investigating what's happening to us. Good to have you both here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Christina Aris and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. I think it was wrong script. By Brian Boone. Our intern today is Elizabeth Walker. Welcome to the staff, Elizabeth. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner.